Hello and welcome to The Download. I'm your host, Dave Richardson, and we are joined today, as we always are on Tuesday, by Stu Kedwell, the head of global equities at RBC Global Asset Management, because it is Stu's days. So, Stu, how are you doing?
Wait a second. I'm not Stu.
What happened? How? You're Sarah Riopelle.
I know. Maybe he was busy today and he sent me instead.
Wow. This is an extra special Sarah's Day that we're going to do. I was just at a conference in Vancouver today, and everyone was asking me, when are you going to have Sarah on again? And I go, she's on like every week. They go, no, she probably hasn't been on for like 6 months.
Has it been that long, really?
It's been a few months anyway. Okay. So it's great to have you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Stu's in New York City digging for gold or some other great ideas around investing. And Sarah Riopelle, of course, is responsible for all of the portfolio solutions at RBC Global Asset Management. So one of our favorite guests and one of our listeners' favorite guests, because she can give such a great overview of everything that's going on and then how it builds together into the right portfolio, which is what she does. She builds these great portfolios, and then hopefully you invest with her, or she'll be able to guide you on some things to think about as you're managing your own portfolio. So again, Sarah, thanks for jumping on.
And, it's my pleasure.
It's been pretty quiet in the whole global economic world and everything, right? There's not a whole lot you're thinking about?
No, not at all. But, you know, to begin with, we should stop about the chaos in my life in general, because my son gets married on Sunday. And so I'm not sure, for all of you out there who've gone through wedding planning before, it's complete chaos. So I don't know what's more stressful, is wedding planning or the global stock market and economy. So I don't know, which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, you're right. I was actually going to ask you how he's doing in high school. And
yeah.
now he's getting married. So, wow,
yeah,
you've
missed a few years.
Yeah, apparently. Well, yeah. you look younger than ever. So it's it must be maybe it's good to have a child getting married. Maybe it'll take some years off me.
Well, we'll see. But thank you. You always know what to say.
Okay. The wedding thing. I also host a wedding planning podcast that you can log in and sign up for.
Perfect.
But this is the economics and market podcast. So let's stick with the economics
we'll
and market.
Focus on that. You know what? I come here quite often and say, you know, economy's doing this, the economy's doing that, and there's lots of risks, but there's lots of opportunities. And the same is true again today. There's risks on the horizon. We have the U.S. administration continues to work through their plans and their policies, and it tends to change from one week to the next, which causes volatility in markets. The AI theme in markets continues to be driving results, particularly in the U.S. market. We've seen strong gold prices driving the Canadian market as well. We've seen interest rates, fall from 4.5% down to 4%. Everything seems to be working right now. Stocks are up and bonds are up, and that's making for good returns for balanced funds. So all in all, it's been a pretty good year to be an investor. What does that mean for the future, though? There's some risks you have to start paying attention to. Valuation risk in the stock market, particularly in the U.S., those returns being driven by AI-driven technology stocks. Some valuation risk in Canada, because we've got a lot of, gold and banks driving returns in Canada. So how sustainable is that going forward? Had some news about regional banks in the U.S. recently. President Trump talking about tariffs on China. So it does feel like with current valuation levels where they are, that maybe you need to be a little bit more cautious about where we go for the next sort of 3 to 6 months. And with that in mind, we actually reduced our equity weight late last week. We still have a small overweight in equities relative to bonds, but just a little bit less so than we were last week, because we wanted to take some profits on those positions and get a little bit closer to neutral as we think about what the next 3 to 6 months might hold.
I think this is really interesting. So it's really interesting because you're taking some money out of stocks and you're moving it into cash. And I mean, just so the listeners, just to put that in perspective, when Sarah's moving 1% out of the equity portfolios that she's managed, this is billions of dollars that she's moving. So this is not a, it's a 1% tiny, but it's still a very large move. Mm-hmm. But it also highlights within anyone's portfolio, the idea that you don't need to go from, you know, 67% equity to zero. You can go from, as you did, from 65 to 66 to 67 and take advantage of that 2% overweight when the market really runs, and then, you know, be a little bit more cautious, take it back down to 66%. It's not, you don't need to make these big swings one way or another. You're sometimes just fine-tuning the portfolio. And then again, you're waiting in stocks just on the growth and appreciation of stocks recently, you know, kind of push you up to a higher level. So you're trimming some of that. But the big idea that when you're managing a portfolio, you want to be vigilant. You want to make moves, you know, on a regular basis. But they don't have to be these swing for the fence moves. Sometimes it's just a little window dressing. It's my beautiful window dressing in the hotel here. Just around the edges, right?
Yeah, and I appreciate that you actually made the baseball reference. Go Blue Jays. But yeah, it's not about trying to go up to the plate and hit a home run every single time that you're there. It's about just hitting singles and doubles consistently over time, and you'll be able to bring in the runs and generate the results on behalf of clients, right?
Yeah, and so as you say, even though when you look at the pluses and minuses of holding equities, you're still in a position where you want to hold stocks and you want to be a little bit overweight. But there has been, as you suggest, a small change in the risks that are out there. And you mentioned all the different risks. And so that gets you in a position where you just take a little bit off the table, and then you take a step back and take a look.
Right. And then if some of those risks resolve themselves, or if they turned out to be, you know, false alarms, so to speak, then we have cash sitting there that we could put money back into the stock market should some of that those clouds dissipate, right? Or if they, you know, those risks become more acute or more apparent, then we can take the extra equity weight out and move back to cash. So it's about being active, monitoring everything on an ongoing basis, and constantly revisiting your assumptions and your forecast when new information comes in to see whether or not the current positioning still makes sense in that context.
So just in keeping with the theme around the wedding planning, but bringing it into your portfolio mindset, we had a question sent in from listener Karen McNally. Oh. And she asks, what keeps you up at night when you're looking at all those risks that are out there on the landscape? What's the one thing that stands out to you? Because you mentioned some of the concerns around lending in U.S. banks. You mentioned, well, that the Trump administration is a going concern on a number of fronts, tariffs. What's keeping you up at night other than the wedding?
I think right now it's probably valuations in the U.S. equity market. I feel like there's a concept in markets called price to perfection, and it kind of feels like the U.S. equity market is priced to perfection. Everything has to go very right now to justify the current valuations and the current levels. And quite often, these bull markets can run for quite a while at these high valuation levels, but when they decide to turn, they can turn quite quickly. And that correction can happen quite quickly. And so it's just about, you know, constantly monitoring what's going on and trying to protect our client assets as much as we can in the face of that potential volatility coming ahead. But then you have to take a step back and say, this is a short-term correction in markets. This should not affect our clients' long-term investment goals, right? And so, you know, you have to balance the short-term with the long-term. And, you know, many of us and our clients are invested with a long-term time horizon. And so they should, focus on what they need to earn over the next 10, 15, 20 years. and not get overly focused on what's going to be happening in the short term. So I always want to be careful when I said we always have these calls and we talk about what's going on in the markets, what's your short-term outlook on markets, but you always have to make sure you're balancing that against what the long-term needs of the portfolio are, right? And so over the short term, I do am concerned about valuations in the equity market, but that doesn't mean that over the long term, I'm going to shy away from equities, because I still believe that you need to have a pretty hefty equity allocation over the long term to be able to generate the returns that you need to meet your retirement goals or whatever your goals are.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about this. You know, with markets sitting at highs, they're pretty clearly saying that a year from now, the economy is probably a little bit better than it is right now. Interest rates are a little bit lower. But even at that front, they can get ahead of themselves. And that's I guess, the concern that you're expressing.
Right. And it would be more of like a consolidation or a correction where the actual the earnings that we're forecasting have to catch up to the valuations that where we are at now. And so it could be just a pause. It could be a bit of a correction or something like that. And then it can continue to move higher from there. So it's about just having the fundamentals catch up to the where the market is at. And we talk about, the AI stocks, the tech stocks in the U.S. and the valuation levels. Unlike the tech wreck back a couple of decades ago, this time around, these are very strong companies that have very strong earnings bases. And we are pricing in, or the market is pricing in, pretty significant earnings growth, but they are not, it's possible that they could achieve those growth levels. Yeah. And so it's not like these valuations are, you know, in the tech wreck, it was, you know, giving hefty valuations on companies that had no earnings at all. This time, we're putting hefty valuations on companies that had pretty strong earnings growth, or earnings, historical earnings, and prospects for earnings growth going forward. It's just about what are those earnings growth numbers going to look like, and how much are you willing to pay for that now? And it does feel that like that's a bit extended, but not completely unreasonable.
It's just remarkable when you look at those companies, that Magnificent Seven, and how, as you say, with current valuations, you need perfection. You know, the goals are stretched and the expectations are high, and then they just keep meeting them.
Yep.
But at some point it will just get too hard, and that's what you experience in every correction, right?
Right. And there's a lot of people and clients and money chasing those stocks because it's kind of what we call FOMO, fear of missing out. And so, as more money starts to chase these high performing stocks, you're going to push those valuations to an extreme that will no longer be sustainable. There will be a breaking point at some point. We haven't found it yet, but I expect it probably will happen at some point in the next several quarters.
So, Sarah, if we just stick with equities for a couple more minutes, where are you overweight or underweight within that slight overweight in equities?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when we actually reduced the equity weight last week, we took it all out of Canada and the U.S. Because that's where our biggest concerns are with respect to valuations. And so we took 1% out of equities, with half coming from Canada, half coming from the U.S. And so we are now underweight the U.S. and slightly underweight Canada, and we are overweight Europe, Asia, and emerging markets, because we think there's better valuations and better prospects, and they're not as expensive in those areas of the market.
Excellent. For regular listeners, you know, and if you're not a regular listener, you can subscribe, find us on YouTube, and give us a thumbs up, 5-star review. Dave Lambert, European equity head at RBC Global Asset Management, was on last week and talking about some of the opportunities in Europe, and that it's not just tanks and banks, as it's been for a little bit. We're seeing a broadening out, and the European market's kind of interesting. We'll get someone on to talk about emerging market equities in the not too distant future as well. So a little bit overweight Europe, emerging markets, Asia, a little bit underweight Canada and the U.S. So then we go to fixed income markets, and the Fed is making their next announcement next week. It's expected that they're going to cut rates by 25 basis points. Slight chance they might do a little bit more rate cuts in the remainder of the year and into next year. We've seen the 10-year U.S. Treasury drop below 4%. Just a little touch below, so it's sitting right in around that 4% level, and you've got, again, the stock market's telling you things are probably okay in the economy over the next 12 months. So how does that fit into the bond market when you're looking at government bonds, or when you get out into the riskier levels of credit within the portfolio?
Yeah, so We actually have our quarterly strategy meeting in 2 weeks, so we'll get an update from the fixed income team on what you're seeing there. I, at this point, not seeing a lot of change in the forecast in terms of what you just sort of summarized as, you know, some Fed cuts on the horizon. And so it's, you know, bond yields falling back down to 4%, I guess are probably a bit surprising for us. So we expect maybe that yields could back up in here, but not significantly. But so when we were making the decision on whether we should sell stocks or what to sell stocks, where we should put the proceeds of that, we decided we wanted to put it into cash. And one, because you don't want to, we didn't really want to buy fixed income at 4% yield levels. And also because we wanted to have the cash available to us to be able to redeploy into the market at some point in the future should, as I said, some of those risks that are on the horizon sort of resolve themselves. And then one of the reasons why we were wanted to reduce the equity weight is that there is some, you know, early signs in the credit markets of some potential stress is a strong word. So there are some risks on the horizon in the credit market as well that we want to keep an eye on. And so, you know, fixed income right now is in an area that we're, you know, the jury's out a little bit on where that might land. And, you know, would like to look at government bonds, you know, see how yield levels play out, see what the Fed does next week, but keeping an eye on the credit spreads as well.
Yeah, well, for about a year, I know if you just look at government bonds and you look at the 10-year, there was a really, really easy trade that you could do. And I know you did it several times where the 10-year just got above 4.5, 4.6, 4.7, buy.
Yep.
And then it just drifted back down to 420, 425.
Sell.
And then sell and then drift back up and down. And so, and now that we've fallen down to four, you know, are we going into a new range or is this just another example of the uncertainty that's out there in markets right now?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a wider range. Maybe it's 4 to 4.5 now. I don't know. And then the other one we didn't talk about was high yield. So we do have some concerns around the high yield market. And so we actually are at very low levels of high yield within the various portfolios because of that potential risk on the horizon in that market.
Yeah. And then so again, you're left with a situation where you're largely balanced. You touch overweight in equity. And then just sort of are you anticipating that the Fed cuts are going to be a positive or negative for stocks, depending on? So I guess the forecast right now, the market forecast would be two more this year. So next week and another one before the end of the year and three or four next year. Do you think that's going to be ultimately beneficial for stocks or is that signaling issues with the economy and earnings that give you real problems with valuations where they are?
I would love to have the answer to that question, Dave. It's the sentiment in the market is very difficult to read right now because to your point, like, okay, you know, Fed cutting rates, it means that they're concerned about the economy and therefore, you know, they're trying to get out in front of it. And so stock prices should come down or, you know, having, you know, lower interest rates is good for stocks. So we should have higher valuation levels. It's, I'm not really sure where we're going to land on that, to be honest. Which is maybe it's some of that uncertainty that is what's causing us to sort of pull back on the equity weight, right?
Yeah.
There's that saying, this time it's different. The reaction to the Fed over the last 12 months in terms of what they've done or haven't done or what they've signaled that they're going to do and stuff like that, the stock market has been a little bit all over the place in terms of its responses to the anticipation of the event and then to the actual event. So I look at it and think, oh, I really would have expected the market to be down today. And turns out it's up so it's done the opposite. So, I mean, we think to me, that's just a signal of why back to our previous conversation is about why we keep those bets fairly tight is because we have a lot of humility around our ability to predict what happens in markets. And so we, you know, keep our risk budget quite small. And we try to be very active with small bets in order to generate the alpha. And I think it's Stu Kedwell that I think he might've stole this from Warren Buffett, but he has a saying that says, predict. I think that's what he says. Don't predict, prepare.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're trying to do. I'm not trying to predict how the market's going to react to what the Fed does, or what the dot plots look like, or what the press conference looks like after the meeting. But I'm going to prepare for each eventuality depending on how the market actually reacts to the actual news.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying to investors and advisors when I'm out, and I'm out talking to them all the time. And you said it earlier, is that focus on the long term is so critical in a period like this. You know, you can point to just what it was a week and a half ago on Friday, the president makes some comments, and takes, you know, over $1 trillion out of the market. Like in terms of valuation, with the move in the markets that day. In fact, it might have been closer to $2 trillion. So if you're myopically focused on everything that's said every day and the moves, you know, so there was the comment on Friday, which takes things down, and then the comments over the weekend that kind of walk it back, and you still don't know exactly where it's going to play out, but the market recovered a little bit. And you need to step back and say, okay, so this discussion that's happening right now, yeah, it could have an impact on the short term, but 10 years from now, I likely won't even remember that happened, and the market will likely be higher. And that's the way you need to think about in investing in the face of this kind of uncertainty, and when single comments, single policy decisions are moving markets as much as they are. You really do have to step back. And as you say, that means you're not going to make a big bet, but you can make some small bets and take advantage of movements in the near term, but focused on how you're going to make money over the long term.
Yeah, I was trying to avoid getting into that part of the conversation, but since you brought it up, it's been very difficult to anticipate the market's reaction to events because of President Trump's ability to move the market, and the fact that the market responds quite significantly to when he makes a comment. And so he makes a comment, and one day he kind of sees how the market reacts. And then if it goes too far in the wrong direction, as it did last Friday, then he next day comes back and walks back those comments and says, oh, never mind, I'm not doing 100% tariffs on China. Or and so then the market reacts back the other way. And so that volatility that we're seeing is, it's amazing the influence or the impact that a single person's voice can have on the global markets. But so that's why it's quite difficult now to predict how markets are going to react to even events like the Fed. And so to your point earlier, to the discussion earlier, we'd rather so build resilient portfolios that can generate returns for clients in any type of scenario, any type of situation, any type of market event, focus on long-term results, see if we can take advantage of short-term volatility when it presents itself, but keep our bets a little bit more limited so that we are not, when we find ourselves on the wrong side of one of those bets because one of these comments comes out, we are not doing permanent damage to portfolios.
Yeah, and I did not mean to take this this particular episode of the podcast down a political road, because that we don't do politics here. There are a lot of political podcasts if you're looking for those, just like there's lots of wedding planning podcasts too. Maybe more political podcasts. So they're out there if that's what you want to listen to. But whether you like Trump or you don't like Trump, and there's listeners I'm sure are on both sides of that. You have to look at the presidency relative to other presidents we've had and say, look, it's just more active. It looks like it's tactically more active, that there's more push and pull, and there's things being said or done or moved or positions changed almost daily or hourly. It's not that it's new that a president or government can have an impact on markets in the short term or in the long term with policy. So that's not new. It's just the hyperactivity that you're getting with this administration, which is a little different, and markets, I think, are still getting used to it.
Yeah, and it's a president who has a particular affinity and interest for stock market, being being a businessman as part of his career path, unlike other presidents that we have in the United States that have not had the same interest and the same focus. And so it's just about, you know, the stock market and the behavior of the stock market is important to him. And therefore, it is much more attuned to the comments that he makes. And he's much more attuned to the market and the impact that his comments have on it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a really interesting environment. But as you say, you take a step back, and I think this is really, really important. Again, we start to look at, you know, 10-year numbers on markets, They're fantastic. We look at 1 year numbers. It's been a good year to be an investor in both stocks and bonds. And in particularly, I think it's been a good year for people who are invested in portfolios like you manage. Don't get too focused on the day-to-day movements. Let somebody like Sarah Riopel worry about that stuff. She's got the expertise, the lifetime training and learning to do that. And just think about, again, long-term, where you want to be positioned to have success in your portfolio.
Great. I have nothing else to say. I think you summed it up nicely.
Well, I tried because, again, you clearly came on and you wanted to make sure I was aware that you're under an extreme amount of pressure right now with the whole wedding planning thing, even though you're the mother of the groom, not the bride. I've got two daughters. I mean, that's going to be tough. Like the guy just kind of shows up. I don't even know how much he'd be involved.
Yeah, it doesn't
that's
work
not
like
the way
that.
It works.
No, no.
Oh,
nice
darn.
Try, though.
You see, I'm a little older than you. I remember the old days. But
the good old days? The
no,
good old
no,
days.
No, not the good. No, the world's better than it's ever been. Don't let the flow of bad news or people tell you it was better before. It's
I think we're aging. We're aging ourselves. I think we're going to lose all the young people off this podcast if we keep going.
I think if we keep going, we're going to lose everybody off this podcast. So Sarah Riopel, thank you very much for joining us for a very special Stu's Days on the podcast, and we won't let it go several months next time.
Perfect. Thank you.
This recording has been provided by RBC Global Asset Management Inc. for informational purposes only and is not intended to be investment or financial advice. You should consult your own legal, accounting, tax, investment, or financial planning advisors before engaging in any transactions.